doesn't they do a lot of work?
Grab your own name tag.
Why can't I get on it? All right, everybody, let's go ahead and get this show started. This is UAF Faculty Senate meeting number 176. If you aren't here for UAF Faculty Senate, you might want to run for the doors now. This is not my aircraft, is what I'm being told. So, welcome, and thank you all for agreeing to participate in Faculty Senate this year. We've got a lot on our plates, so let's go ahead and get this going with a roll call. Jane?
Please correct me if I don't pronounce your last name correctly. Abramovich. Alexiev. Arendt.
Here.
Bake.
Here.
Bandopadhyay. Is anyone here for Sukumar? Barbosa. Bret Hart.
Here.
Brown. Anyone here representing Steve Brown? Stephen Brown? Cahill?
Here.
Davis?
Here.
Fallon?
I'm substitute for him.
Okay. And what was your name?
Morton, M-O-R-T-O-N.
Thank you. George Bettisworth?
Here.
Golux?
Here.
Gustafson?
Here.
Healy? Henry?
Here.
Himmelblum?
Here.
Yep.
Jensen?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Jolie? Anyone here for Jolie? Jones. Okay, anybody here for Deb Jones? Larden.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Mathis.
Here.
McCackern.
Here.
Metzger.
Here.
Okay. Mayer.
Meyer. Here.
Meyer.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Moses. Okay. Nadine. Anyone here for Elizabeth Nadine? Newberry. Chung Sang. Radenbaugh.
Radenball's here, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Rennis.
Here.
Here.
Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine. Anybody here for Dave Valentine? Okay. Weber.
Here.
Winfrey.
Here.
Okay. Zhang. Song Zhang. Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and move to the approval of minutes for meeting 175. Has everyone had a chance to read the minutes? Anyone find anything that needs to be changed? Then can we have a motion to approve the minutes of meeting 175?
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? Nope. Okay. Minutes are approved. You all have the agenda before you. Are there any changes people would like to adopt? Nope. Then let's go ahead and get a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion moved.
And second?
Second.
All right. All the can you? It's going to be a fun semester. all right. So, all in favor of adopting the agenda as is?
Aye.
Any nays? Any abstentions? All right. Then we have adopted the agenda. So let's go ahead and move on to the status of Chancellor's Office actions. All of the motions sent forward by Faculty Senate were approved, and we have no motions pending. So we're in a good start. Which brings us to public comments and questions. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the Senate? Hearing none, that moves us right on into President's remark. So, as I said at the very beginning, thank you all for agreeing to serve this semester. I really do appreciate your service to the university. It's going to be an exciting year. There's a lot to do. So with that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Faculty Alliance aspects, and I'll let others at the table talk about some of the things that are coming up through UAF. So Faculty Alliance, of course, is the, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, are the presidents, usually past presidents and presidents-elects of the three MAUs. And so you've got nine faculty members really serving as the voice for the UA faculty at statewide level. And so we get together on a regular basis and discuss issues that cross MAUs. So having said that, we had our first retreat, and some of the things that are going to be coming out of this, and you will have heard about this, you'll be getting memos, I think, on a fairly regular basis about strategic directions. The president is trying to set what are the directions the university should be taking. He has a lot of emphasis on more students completing faster. So he's pushing advising, he's pushing how can we get our students to completion. And completion can be anything from a certificate to just taking a class and enjoying it, all the way through PhDs. So what he wants is for us to serve the people of the state and get that message out. And he's trying to figure out what is the best way to approach this. How do we do it? And originally it had been strategic planning and setting goals, but now it has shifted to strategic direction. Basically, we're trying to go the right direction. We want to see, as he puts it, the needle move, that we're making progress, but we don't have any fixed timeline and goals really on it to get pinned down to, that if you miss it, you're bad kids, basically. But really to look for the improvement, look for ways to streamline processes and move university forward. With that, we just got a memo today looking for ways to streamline paperwork, where we've got cases where we have duplication of efforts. We have memos that have just paragraphs lifted from other memos. He wants to get rid of some of the duplication, really streamline it, bring it down. So if you have some of your favorite examples of things that are duplicative that really need to be fixed, please let myself, Jennifer, or John Dean know. Because we'll be looking for ways to streamline it in the Alliance. Other things we're going to be looking at in terms of Alliance is Board of Regents policy and how it impacts the different MAUs. Right now, we're supposed to handle certain things the same way across MAUs, and we found out that UAF does it a little differently, and we basically need to ask Board of Regents approval to do that. So things like the incomplete, which we passed last year, where we said, yeah, we're sticking to the after a year we're going to an F. Well, the other MAUs don't really like that, so we have to ask permission to go ahead and do that from Board of Regents. So we'll be handling some issues along those lines, you know, talking about how do we do transfers, how do we handle things along those lines. So those are some of the key things that are going to be in Faculty Alliance this year, in addition to handling the normal communication between campuses. The strategic planning is going to take, I believe, a major part of our time. So with that, are there any questions for me about what's going on in terms of Alliance? Nope. With that, I will hand it over to President-elect Jennifer Reynolds.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to update you on one topic that came in front of the Senate last spring. This is the web timesheet. Beth Boehner and Vicki Gilligan came to the, I believe it was the March meeting, and did a presentation, and there was some discussion about this. I'm going to update you on where that stands. The developments have been continuing through the summer. For those of you who are new to the topic, the web timesheet is essentially an electronic form of your timesheet that you now do in written form. The university is UA system has been working on creating an online system for this. The timesheets are used for two purposes. One is to pay people, and the other is for reporting on grants, reporting the effort expended on the grant project, and also referred to as grants compliance. So for those two purposes, the first can be streamlined greatly, and I think you all will be very pleased at how well that's being streamlined. The second, grants compliance, the changes have both to do with streamlining that process and trying to correct what Human Resources sees as invalid processes or invalid practices that were going on in the university. So some things are being restricted, other things are being streamlined. Right now, the beta version of the online timesheet for staff is going through a pilot test, that's the term. And they have started with the simple situations for staff who don't have shift work, staff who don't work on grants, et cetera. So they're starting with the easy, moving to the more difficult. The faculty or exempt employee timesheet pilot will be started in November. And it, again, will start with units that have easy timesheet reporting. It will not include, as far as I know, grants issues, because they want to do the easy part first. There have been several issues that have come up from faculty and others. One was the question of what happens if the employee does not have access to the web for long periods of time. How do you file your timesheet? That one is on their list of unresolved questions, but there's a lot of discussion, and I'm sure that it will get resolved one way or another. Right now, they are talking about an option of allowing people to file up to two timesheets in advance, which would cover 4 weeks. That's not enough for everyone, but it at least the subject is under discussion. Another restriction is who can approve these timesheets. If anyone has questions about this, you can ask me later. So I mainly want you to know that the system is now in pilot test form, and the exempt employees will start seeing this in November. Those of you who don't work on grants will only need to file timesheets if you are filing for some kind of leave. Otherwise, your timesheets will be filed on your or you just get paid automatically. So that will greatly simplify the lives of many of the faculty who don't work on grants routinely. Those of us who work on grants are looking at the details. Any questions on this?
Actually, I have a question, because I went online. They sent out a survey or something, and I looked at it, and it seemed to me like you have to download a program onto your computer in order to submit a timesheet. Is that correct? And if so, is that changeable?
Not as far as I know. I believe it's done through a web browser interface.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
What are some of the restrictions that you're aware of?
They have removed the PPAs. You know, PPAs are personnel and payroll assistants. These are the staff in your departments who handle the nuts and bolts of timesheet collating and reporting. And they have been removed from the process. They now will have what's called FYI access. They will be able to look at the timesheets online, but they will not be able to comment on them. They will not be able to flag errors or send them back to you. There's a lot of discussion right now about how much involvement those PPAs ought to be able to have. Human Resources is concerned because there were PPAs who were changing employees' timesheets without the employee being involved in that step, and that is a big no-no for grants compliance. And so this is one of the invalid practices that HR is trying to clamp down on. There's still discussion about how this is going to work and what sort of access these people will have. However, the HR is arguing that because they're building in a lot of error checking into the system, much of the error checking that those people used to do will not be necessary. So right now there's a wait-and-see attitude. Let's see how the pilot tests go. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, that takes us to comments by Chancellor Rogers.
Well, thanks, and welcome back, everyone. It's great to have faculty and students back on this campus and at all the rural campuses. Been focused for the last several days on working on my remarks for tomorrow's convocation, so sort of totally thinking about that, and we'll try not to say things today that I'm going to just repeat tomorrow. We do have the accreditation visit coming up, however, that I want to just, I think everyone is aware of how important institutional accreditation is. That visit coming up the first week of October, the evaluators visiting this time only the Fairbanks campus, which was a bit of a surprise to us. If you get questions, please answer them as quickly as you can, and we'll make it through. I think if you haven't already read the accreditation report, it's actually a pretty good read and says quite a lot about the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The Board of Regents will meet later this month on our they'll get the first view of the FY13 budget request. We're still in a process of negotiation as to exactly what's in and what's out. I think the focus in the President's recommendation will be quite similar to last year's. Not a lot in the way of new programs, a focus on deferred maintenance in the capital budget. Finally, the strategic direction process that's going on at the system office will include quite a bit of community participation. This strategic planning process, the President's brought in Terry McTaggart, former president of the University of Maine system, who has done work at both the system office and here at UAF to help guide that. We'll see early drafts coming out this fall and essentially circulated with what are some major new directions or changes to existing directions for the system as a whole. That will obviously impact how we look at the next round of our mission, our goals, our themes for the next round of accreditation, which begins as soon as we finish this round of accreditation. With that, let me stop, and I'd be happy to answer questions that anyone may have. I'll answer a lot more of them tomorrow.
Okay, seeing no questions, let's move on to the remarks by Provost Hendricks.
Included with your materials for this meeting is a report on the outcomes of the promotion, tenure, fourth year, and post-tenure review processes that went on last year. And those were largely successful for most people that applied. 90% of individuals that applied for promotion and or tenure were awarded what they requested. There were mostly satisfactory fourth-year and post-tenure reviews. With the fourth year review, those are supposed to be and are formative reviews advising faculty members on how to improve. So an unsatisfactory review is hopefully a spur and an assist to improvement and not the final judgment on a person's performance or prospects for tenure. I'd like to add that in reviewing these files, I basically find it every year a wonderful experience. You have many accomplishments as faculty members, a lot to be proud of. I find that this is one of the best ways for me to get acquainted in depth with the work of faculty and their accomplishments, and so I really appreciate all of the hard work that people do, but also all the hard work that they put into preparing their files. I'll get the opportunity to review 105 this year, I understand, so I'm just looking forward to that mostly. One other thing that I'll quickly mention, although the Chancellor already mentioned it a little, is that, as Dana will tell you more about, we are going to have the site visitors from the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. If we were in the old accreditation process after that, we'd have at least a few moments to rest on our laurels, but we won't under the new accreditation process, because about this time next year, we need to supply Northwest with a year one report, which among other things should have an updated mission statement and an updated strategic plan associated with it. So lots of work to be done this year, and we're looking forward hopefully to having some maybe younger isn't exactly the right word for it, but but Dana and I are on the slippery slope of the edge of middle age, not the first edge. And 7 years is the next cycle. Maybe we won't be around by the end of it. So we need some more people to get involved, step up, join in, have all the great fun that we've been having this past couple of years in developing the accreditation report.
Any questions for Provost Henrich? Nope, then let's go ahead and move on to comments by Vice Provost Thomas. It's a trackpad. Dana, steal a mic.
Here.
I'll get maybe Reiner to push the arrows as we need. So you've heard from the Chancellor and Provost that we're having an accreditation evaluation this fall. We've submitted the accreditation report. So you may know about specialized accreditation versus institutional accreditation. Institutional accreditation is what we're talking about, not something like the School of Management or the School of Engineering, their specialized accreditation. This is institutional. It's mandated by the U.S. Secretary of Education, and that authority is given to one of six regional accrediting institutions. Ours is the Northwest Commission. And so that's who is organizing our evaluation. Some basic information about accreditation here. We're not likely to lose our accreditation. I'll make that clear. Continuously accredited since 1934. But we may get some recommendations for improvement, some of which could cause additional reporting and or additional visits. And that's really what we're trying to avoid. The main website is there at the bottom. It's just the UAF homepage /accreditation. On the left-hand side of that will be the comprehensive self-evaluation report. I'll encourage you to get on there and just do a search for your unit and see what is said about it. It's about, the report's about 200 pages and about 285 pages of appendices, and that doesn't count all of the online materials that we've made available. We've really tried to go much more electronic this time, so we cut the report down from the last annual review in 2001 by over 100 pages, if that gives you some idea, so quite a significant change, but the process has changed as well. The report's in the hands of the evaluators. You might find it entertaining. I'll surprise Karen Jensen here by saying one of the evaluators wrote me this morning and said they wanted to meet with Karen about the library. Pete Penny and I interacted today about a workforce development question and who that evaluator might speak to. So the point is, evaluators are making contacts now, and any one of you could end up on the phone or in an email conversation with an evaluator. So I want you to know about it. I want you to be responsive. Tell everybody in your department, your representatives, go back and share this information. Make sure that we don't have anybody saying, who are you? Why are you here? What are you asking about? Okay? We don't need that. All right? So make sure and share this information. The visits, October 3 through 5, public presentation of their recommendations will be 9:30 a.m. Oh, I thought I corrected that. Evidently not. It's in the Davis Concert Hall, so encourage you to attend that. Completely open. It's a very short meeting. It's only scheduled for a half an hour, for instance. It usually goes something like the chancellor thanks them for their constructive feedback. They get up and thank us for the welcoming hospitality of the institution, and then they simply read what's called commendations, the good things, exceptional things we're doing, and the recommendations, areas where we need improvement, and then they leave. It's not a question-answer period. It's not a, you know, it's just a presentation of results, and they're out the door. All right? That'll drive some of what we will do in the near term and possibly in the long term. Next. There are 9 evaluators and a Northwest Commission rep coming. All of the evaluators, this is a peer evaluation process, so they tend to be faculty members and administrators from other institutions. You can see the names and representatives here. The next page. Sure.
Will that presentation be web-streamed?
It's not going to be web-streamed. It will be audioed.
Okay.
So Bonnie Allen is the one that was asking about Karen this morning, for instance. And the next one. Normally, we would have just a regular rep from the Northwest Commission. We're getting the president of the commission coming on this one, Sandra Ellman. So you'll all get a chance to meet and greet with Sandra and know something about the commission. Go ahead, Mark. So where are they coming? They're going to ground truth our report. It's a fundamental thing. We've said certain things. They're going to come and ask questions and see if you know, those questions or those statements that we've made hold up in what they see here. They're likely to meet mostly with vice chancellors, directors, deans, etc., but there are open meetings with faculty, a separate open meeting with students, and a separate open meeting with staff. I will encourage you to attend the faculty meeting and listen to their questions and comments and provide your feedback. I'll encourage you to be frank and open. Tell them your opinion. So we're all used to that sort of thing. They're going to ask you what your role is in UAF's core themes. I hope you know what those are. I have a slide on the next page that will remind you. A very common question is, do you have adequate resources? And what's the universal answer to you? Do you have adequate resources?
No.
Of course not. None of us believes we have adequate resources. Accreditation's a two-edged sword, right? You want to use it as an opportunity to say, gee, we could do so much better if we just had whatever it is, okay? But you don't want to make it sound so bleak that they say, oh, that program needs to go away. It doesn't have adequate resources. All right? So keep that in mind, two-edged sword. Speak your mind, but understand the edginess here. All right? Is your unit following the standards and policies set by the commission? So, for instance, are you playing an adequate role in student learning outcomes assessment for your program and the core curriculum? Right? That's going to be a key question. Go ahead. There's the core themes. If you're like me, you're probably reciting them in your sleep by now. Probably nobody is badly affected about these as I am, but hopefully you know them and encourage everyone that you represent to know them as well, please. All right. Go ahead, Rainer. What comes next? The Chancellor alluded to this. We won't have final recommendations. We'll have what they might call the evaluation team's initial recommendations. The commission actually reviews these, talks with the reviewers, and makes a final list for us about January. So it'll be the end of January, could be early February, before we actually see them. They sometimes add to what the evaluation team says. They sometimes, but very rarely, take away, all right? So it can be more than we will hear on Wednesday the 5th, all right? So just be aware of that. We immediately begin a new 7-year cycle, and we have a year one report actually has to be submitted by September 15th, 2012, so almost this week, a year from now, all right? That is an opportunity to redo those 5 themes if we're not happy with those themes. And the things that go with those themes are specific objectives and indicators of achievement. I'm hoping one of their recommendations will be your list of indicators of achievement is a bit too long so that we can shorten those a bit. We don't have to collect quite as much information to represent that we're achieving our mission. We have 37 indicators of achievement right now, all right? Pretty extensive, scattered across those 5 themes. Right? I'm hoping for one of those recommendations. So at the very least, I will encourage you all to bring up the core themes, objectives, and indicators. There's a single page that lists all of them. It's on the second page of Chapter 4 if you go to the accreditation report. So it's an easy find, second page of Chapter 4. Print that out, start discussing, is this the right list or not to represent UAF's mission and whether we're fulfilling it or not? Because that's fundamentally what we will have to put together for next year. Of course, we have to connect to our strategic planning effort and our revision of the mission. And so far, we've been waiting to see what their response is. But we really need to be thinking about those things now. Right? Start preparing in your mind what we want to take on as strategic targets, how our mission might need to be revised. All right. Thank you.
Any questions for Dana?
Jane?
Do we know when the faculty meeting is, and will it be audio conferenced?
It will be audio conferenced, and I do know I don't know when it is. I know where to find where it is.
Okay.
Okay. I will send that to Jane and get that distributed to you all.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is about the mission, so I don't know how much of that you know, but I'm wondering how much input there's going to be on the new mission formulation. Is that going to be kind of an executive task, or are faculty and staff going to have?
Ultimately, the Board of Regents has to adopt any change to the mission statement, so it's a pretty broad and inclusive process before we would take it to the board that includes faculty input and staff input and direction on that. Missions don't change rapidly, and so I wouldn't expect dramatic change. But if there are suggestions that come from the Faculty Senate, I'd be very interested in those.
Any other questions? Then let's go ahead and move to new business. The first order of business is a motion to approve a new minor in marine sciences submitted by Curricular Affairs. Is there someone who wants to speak to this for Curricular Affairs? Yep. Take it away, Renner.
Board of Regents has indicated they don't want to have new programs, basically new majors, that they're going to cost money. We hope and believe that they'll have nothing against having a new minor, essentially zero cost. It's well put together. The ideas behind it are firmly in place. We really don't see it as going to cost significantly, and it will help to improve the stature of the Marine Science Limnology program at the university. I urge you to accept it.
Any discussion on this? Okay, then do I hear a motion to approve the minor?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Nope, then it passes. That brings us to the motion to reaffirm unit criteria for CEM submitted by Unit Criteria Committee. Someone here to speak for unit criteria? Go ahead, Perry.
The unit criteria for every group has to be reviewed every 6 years, I think. In this case, CEM renewed theirs or reviewed theirs because they had merged with computer science and they had new members in their unit. So they added a few things to their criteria, and generally it was relatively smooth process of review. There's only a few things that, for an engineering group, they added things like software displays and the like. So sort of things that would have appeared in an art criteria appeared with them. But in general, we found it a fairly easy process. So,
any further discussion of the unit criteria? Nope. Then can I have a motion to approve the unit criteria for CEM?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right. Then all those in favor of reaffirming the unit criteria for CEM, please say aye.
Aye.
Any nay? Any abstentions? Nope. Then on to our next order of business. Reaffirmation of the resolution for open promotion and tenure meetings submitted by the Administrative Committee. I'll speak to this one. This is the resolution we pass every year, starting in fall 2007, saying that we really, for openness and shared governance and people understanding the process, we'd really like to encourage there to be open promotion and tenure committee meetings. And so the resolution itself reads, whereas the members of the faculty committees are called upon under the concept of shared governance to provide professional review of faculty of other faculty candidates undergoing tenure promotion and comprehensive review pre- and post-tenure, whereas the faculty portion of the review process must be fair and reasonable in order to maintain the reputation of the university and the integrity of the academic process, and whereas open and transparent committee deliberations facilitate fair and reasonable review, therefore be it resolved that the UAF Faculty Senate strongly requests that all faculty review committees choose to follow the traditional option of allowing a candidate for tenure promotion or comprehensive review to opt for an open meeting, and that mandatory closed meetings be avoided, including, and this had been for the 2007-2008 review cycle. Of course, this is now, we need to revise that to say, the 2011-2012 review cycle. Sorry, just caught that typo right now. All those in favor, well, actually, any discussion about this resolution? Nope. All those in favor of reaffirming Faculty Senate's resolution for the open promotion and tenure meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, then it passes. This brings us to discussion items. And we'll lead off with the Dean's Council General Education Revitalization Revision Recommendations with Dana Thomas speaking to it. It's attachment 176-5. Dana?
Yes, in your packet was a collection of recommendations made by the deans concerning the revision of general education, or core revision, depending on what you'd like to call it. I asked for the deans to meet this summer in the spirit of shared governance, in part because there's been a lot of concern expressed by the General Education Revision Committee of the potential impact of tuition revenue generation for various colleges and schools, and I thought by engaging the deans in this conversation early that this would help, you know, with their understanding and their engagement in the process, instead of putting it off until after the Senate did something and then having the deans start looking at the potential tuition revenue generation question. You get the idea. So one of the very first things I did was with information that the provost and PEAR came out with, we passed to the individual deans the tuition revenue from core curriculum classes over the past 3 years so that they had a very clear picture of what tuition revenue was. So that's sort of a base, if you will, of understanding of the financial side. Now, the impact won't at all be clear until this body says this is the collection of courses and experiences that will now satisfy the new requirements, and we're not there yet. All we've done, all the Senate has done, and signed by the Chancellor, is a new set of intended learning outcomes. So there's still further work to go, but the deans now know where they stand. In having this discussion, the deans looked at those intended outcomes and made some very specific suggestions. One is a suggested correction to the motion itself, which refers to associate programs generally. The current core only applies to Associate of Arts and Associate of Science, not to Applied Associate of Science degrees, not AASs. And so a small recommendation that that wording is changed in the original motion was made as one example. Other examples of things that came up were how you might proceed as a body in this work. They're just suggestions. Take them as such. They're recommendations. But, you know, in the spirit of shared governance, I'll ask you to read them and take them seriously. Clearly, this body is responsible for deciding on what the general education requirements are. Right. The process suggested effectively is to write a series of guidelines of what the expectations are for courses that will meet the various components, if you will, of the new intended learning outcomes. And then once those guidelines are there, then to ask units to say which courses meet these guidelines and how do they do so. Right, and effectively create a submission process, if you will, that, you know, here's an existing course, we're going to alter it perhaps a little bit by doing the following, and we believe that it will meet the learning outcomes for this new set of learning outcomes in the following way. Right? So that's the idea, and this body can then look at the collection of those. You could do it piece by piece, you could do it all at once. You know, there's a lot of different options, but that was some of the guidance that was given here. Included with this are all of the existing guidelines that we could find. I will say many of them, many of the existing guidelines need attention. So in particular, I'll pick on the writing component of general ed. Right now it talks about the percentage of the grade that must be associated with written work. I would much rather, in addition to perhaps that information, guide some detail of what experience the student will have. So, for instance, a W course might require at least 20 written pages in a semester. Right? That's a very common thing that shows up in Academically Adrift, the recent book, that a very large proportion of baccalaureate students have never had to write 20 pages or more. Right? It shows up in the National Survey of Student Engagement. Have you written at least 10 pages this semester? Questions like that, all right? So guiding the experience a little bit more in setting those guidelines would be one of the things for you to consider, all right? So read through those. I'll be happy to come back next time, talk with you about them, see if you have questions, et cetera. But your committee will be working on these, and just take them in the spirit of shared governance and recommendations from another group. Are there any questions?
Actually, more a thought than a question. And this is about the capstone, which I'm in general very much in favor of. In psychology, we instituted a capstone 10 years ago when we revised the curriculum, and we've struggled with it ever since because so many of our students are transfer students, and so they end up taking the capstone when they've only had two or three psych classes, and they're not ready for that, but if they didn't take it then, you know, they would have to add another semester, or most of their training has been at another institution, and so then what we consider a capstone for our curriculum really doesn't fit their experience. So we've really struggled with that question of actually are in the process of eliminating it again because it just really didn't work out. And so I just wanted to provide that as a piece of feedback of maybe thinking of something else. We've really, over the last year, we've really struggled with this. It's like we did think about a thesis or a project like that, except it's such a huge burden on the faculty. You know, we have almost 300 majors. We don't have enough faculty to read all of the projects and to guide students in a meaningful way through their projects and theses. So if you're interested in getting some feedback from a group that's really, really, really thought about this, I welcome you to join us. And
the General Education Revitalization Committee is the right group to share this with, of course. I know David Valentine's out today. He's out in the field, as I recall. Otherwise, he would be here. But he has chaired that group last year.
Okay,
so
you
want to make sure that David hears that. I'll discourage psychology from acting on that action to get rid of it, the capstone course right now, simply because the Faculty Senate has passed something that says all baccalaureate programs are going to have a capstone experience. Now, it doesn't have to be a capstone course, but there has to be a capstone experience. And so, you know, before you act on that, you might raise that with the psych department. Make sense?
I will do that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm
Jordan?
Just wondering what the timeline is. Small department, sociology, also a capstone course, rethinking the construction of that and the construction of our program. And part of our thinking will be greatly influenced by what happens with the core curriculum,
sure,
of course. And it sounds to me like you're saying that initially what happens is there are these goals, agendas, and that people then apply basically to say these courses fit these objectives. And so down the road, I guess I'm just wondering what is the timeline for all of this to happen. I'm wondering how much change we ought to do now versus later. Do you see what I mean?
I do. Changing your individual major requirements versus the core and how much involvement you're going to have in revising the core as well.
Or revising the capstone or whatever.
Yeah. My easy out answer, of course, is the Faculty Senate's responsible for the timeline in developing this. And so I am hopeful that we can get through this process this year. But I also understand if the Faculty Senate said, well, we're going to take this on very thoughtfully and carefully, and this year we're going to take on, let's say, communication and natural science. All right? And that's what we're going to work on and achieve that. And then next year we'll finish the rest of the components of the core. So those are examples, but again, that's up to the Senate to decide that path.
So we don't know.
Yeah. I would really, you know, the last time we worked from 87 through 91 to implement the core, to give you an idea. We've worked on the intended learning outcomes for 3 years. So time to finish this.
And even once the Faculty Senate has adopted the core, clearly there's got to be time for implementation. It doesn't go into effect, you know, the day you approve it. I think that's the key, is how long does it take departments to work through and nominate the courses to make any modifications. So it's not going to happen overnight.
I will encourage you in these recommendations to use a little bit of thinking outside the box. So, for instance, there's a globalization element to the new intended learning outcomes. One of the suggestions is if a student spends a semester abroad, that they automatically satisfy that requirement. Right? So, you know, things like that, you might think about those kinds of outside-of-the-box kinds of approaches. So be creative. It's an opportunity. We've had the same course since 91 with little change. It really is in need of change and modernization. So,
any other questions? I'd like to make a comment in here. There's some recommendations in terms of core review, looking at whether or not current courses are meeting the core outcomes, and with W's and O's, et cetera, have you migrated away from what the intent of the course was? I do believe that core review should take a look at that. So my recommendation is that the committee pick up those pieces, see how we're doing, are our W's and O's still meeting the requirements that were there, and be prepared to come up with a process for any new courses that might come into core so that they are reviewed, they are assessed, and we make sure that they haven't drifted away from what the intent had been and what the learning outcome had been. Because we want to make sure the students get the things we consider important in the core, in their core, and aren't missing something that, you know, will help them be a better employee or just a better member of the community, et cetera.
One thing I might add there is there's at least a couple of core courses that haven't been taught in 5 years. So you might reconsider whether those are really core.
Okay, Laura?
Just a short comment.
That actually brings up another interesting point. So how many of these core classes are being taught by new faculty?
Absolutely, yes. And have drifted away, like they're saying. That is a problem.
Franz?
It might also be that they drifted away because the core has changed and it's not reflected. There is a lot of change going on in technology that might change the content of a class. It might be changing it for a reason. And so
that's not part of the core, though.
Yeah, this is something we need to look at. And the five-year did remind me that we are, I know GAC is going to be once again dealing with the moldy courses issue, that if you haven't taught a course in 5 years, we may delete it if you don't respond and say there really is a reason that it will be taught soon, honestly. So I know that GAC will be looking at that one again. Any other questions for Dana? Laura?
Well, I'm still wondering what the process is then. So is there somebody sitting in these classes and evaluates that, or is it supposed to get, you know, the idea from the syllabus, or how are we evaluating if the core is still a core?
Well, there
problem.
Yeah, I mean, there are some processes in place in core review. There, but we also are going to need to come up with some ways of evaluating this. WO's natural sciences have some fairly clear guidelines. Others don't. And so part of what core review will need to do is develop or go back to the original intent of those core pieces, find out what the intent was, and come up with some process to evaluate whether or not it has drifted away. Is it appropriate? Is it not? So that's going to be in core review's domain. And most of the rest of this, of course, needs to go to GERC. The General Ed Revitalization Committee, because we want to make sure that this is considered fairly quickly discussed, and if there are recommendations that come out of GERC that say, okay, we need a new committee to address this, or, you know, this is all nicely in core review's domain, but here's some recommendations, we need to know that. Any other comments, questions? All right, then on to the next piece of discussion. Program review and draft motion to amend educational effectiveness policy. Dana again.
So last year there was a motion about this time about moving program review from a five-year cycle, which is mandated by the Board of Regents, to a three-year cycle. And at the same time we had a request from the Chancellor to review all academic programs this last year. That process is almost complete. The Chancellor's Cabinet is finalizing the last stage of that three-stage process. Remember, there was a faculty review committee that looked at all of the programs, an administrative committee that looked at all the programs, and then the Chancellor's Cabinet, putting their final review on it. I guess I'll remind you that any programs identified for elimination would have to be approved through this body and the Board of Regents. That's the normal process. And there are a handful of programs that have been identified for potential elimination. So those will be coming to this body. My guess would be at the next meeting. And those units have been made aware of the recommendations on that already. So in that review process, I had asked for a three-year program review process so that we had two full cycles of review and then a year off during the new seven-year accreditation cycle. This body was reluctant to agree to that three-year cycle, and I understand that. And so what we'd like to do is fall back to the five-year process mandated by the Board of Regents. It doesn't perfectly align with the accreditation cycle, but it will do. But part of that is to revise the educational effectiveness policy, and that is outcomes assessment is really what that is, to have reporting done every other year, because that is what is of key importance to the accreditation process, is that that is occurring regularly and being done well. Right? So why every other year? This makes it clear to each and every department chair that they will have some responsibility for implementing outcomes assessment. Department chairs typically serve a two-year term, and that makes it clear to each and every one that a report will have to be submitted during their time as chair. So that's the motion I've submitted for your consideration. There's one other revision, and that is that the accreditation and assessment assistant receives a copy of the report that you generate, and that is done by the end of contract in May. There's a little bit of flexibility on that date in May. Some units that have a vast majority working on 12-month contracts delay a little bit to get feedback from national tests. Chemistry is one of those, for instance. And so we can be a little flexible on that date, but we wanted to put a target date in the motion. So, good changes. Are there questions on that?
Dana, the motion used the word biannually to indicate, and I'm hearing 2 years.
Yep, just like biweekly, our paychecks are biweekly.
The Webster's dictionary biannual is
here we go.
Twice a year.
Well, that's fine too. You can report twice a year if you'd like. Okay, so you would like me to? You'd like to suggest a revision to every other year or something like that? Every 2 years. I will be happy to accept that as a friendly amendment, if you will. So this is not under new business. This is under discussion. So at this point, the motion's in your hands.
Ken?
Is there any accommodation to schools that already go through a two-year process of outcomes assessment? Does everybody have to be on the same two-year cycle, or could it be staggered if you're already doing it on the alternate years?
Not everybody has to be on the same two-year cycle. We can live with that. You know, we want reports posted for evaluators to see that are no more than 2 years old.
And what would be involved in these reports?
Usually what you show, I'll encourage you all to go and look at the Provost website under assessment, because all of your programs are represented there. There is an assessment plan for each and every program, and the vast majority, although not all, have an assessment summary. The assessment summary shows the information that's been collected and recommendations that the department has made based on that information, and what curricular changes have occurred with the intent of improving the curriculum based on the assessment of student learning. So that's what goes into the report.
Any other questions, discussion of this?
Yeah, I want to urge everyone to go back to your department and discuss this, both the program review and the assessment timing. Discuss it with your department chair and the people in your department who have been involved in this process so far. This will come up for discussion again in the next meeting, possibly the one after that. So we want you all to be prepared with input from your own department.
Thank you.
All right, that takes us to the next discussion item, which is the Legislative Coordination Ad Hoc Committee. Faculty Alliance met with Chris Christensen, who is now our new legislative person down in Juneau, and we think the time is right for faculty to get more involved in working with legislators, and not just in the legislative session. We need to be dealing with legislators around the calendar year, not just piling on to the chaos in Juneau during the session. So we think that we can work with Chris to help get the UAF stories out there about the great things that are done at this university. And to that end, we want to form an ad hoc committee to go ahead and get some faculty who are interested in this together to come up with processes, training in terms of how to deal with legislators, et cetera, and really come up in conjunction with Chris with a plan on how to sell UAF and the great things we do. So if you are interested in participating in this committee, please email me, and we'll be working on putting together a group to work with Chris on this and to be kind of the front. And also, if you have good stories you think should be told, please let us know, because we really want to get out there the good things that are done. So, and if you happen to know of any legislators who happen to be coming anywhere near UAF, let us know. We'd like to show them the wonderful things we do. So basically, take any opportunity we can to take these people aside and say, hey, we're great, fund us. We don't have to say the last couple words. That's kind of implied. But we really do want to get out the good things that UAF is doing for the state, because we are doing good things. So if you have an interest, go ahead and contact me. We'll be putting this group together here shortly. Any questions or comments on that one? Yeah, and we're going to say members don't need to be Senate. So,
I had a quick question. I feel as if I'm often asked, what are great things that you're doing by various, that might be the Aurora magazine, or it might be the CLA magazine, or it might be the Marketing and Communications Department, and now this. And earlier in this meeting, we had a whole issue of reducing, it wasn't a different context, but reducing the amount of duplication that kind of goes through this whole issue. So I don't have a particular idea, but it does seem to me as if I have now lost track of who I'm trying to keep track of, what it is that I'm doing where, and I don't know if that could be centralized in some way.
That's definitely something to consider, because if we have a one-stop shop, we aren't asking for the same information again and again and again. So I will definitely add that one and work with folks in marketing, communications, et cetera, to see what we can do. Good idea. Any other comments, questions? Nope. Then let's move on to the next discussion item, which was suggested change to the incomplete grading policy. We passed it. We're after a year. If you do not finish your incomplete, it automatically goes to an F. And it got pointed out that some students, if they had just let it go, would have gotten a C. So do we really want to punish them with an F by not completing the I paperwork, the projects required in order to finish their incomplete? So do we want to consider this again and bring it up that in the incomplete paperwork we have what grade would the student get if they did not turn in the last bit of work that would need the incomplete? And so you've got a choice. It's filled in. If you don't complete the incomplete after a year, you get whatever that grade was. versus the automatic F. So when we do the incomplete paperwork, what we would say is, okay, you've done to this point, you're missing 20% of your grade, here's what you would get if you just basically didn't complete the last bit versus here is the F. And so, you know, after a year, you would have it automatically default to whatever that one was. So the student knows it's either going to be this or an F, or complete the incomplete. So any comments on that from?
As far as I know, it is in the paperwork. The last paperwork I've downloaded from the web pages, it states you have to state the grade the student would get at that stage.
No, the grade that they have so far.
At least a passing grade in
but
the
he
course.
But he has to have a passing grade at that stage.
At that stage. Right. But what we're looking at is you may have a C 6 weeks in, but if you don't complete the last work, you'd be looking at a D. And so what we'd have to say is if you don't complete the incomplete, you would get a D. But you have to be passing the course in order to file for an incomplete. Laura, did that answer your question?
No, I just don't get it why, for me, if they don't care enough to complete this coursework, even though they know that this will turn into an F, I have absolutely no patience for that.
And
go ahead, Mike.
My comment on that is then does incomplete become the default grade for anyone with less than an A?
Right.
So do all students get the same opportunity to raise their grade if they haven't achieved an A by the end of the semester?
The answer would be no, but I'm
right.
trying to figure out how exactly we ensure that.
Well, you have to come up with a reason.
I mean,
there's
a definite criteria.
Different things here. One of which is, say, you've been earning an A so far, and the last 2 weeks of the class, your
get
parents both died, and you couldn't finish it. Well, okay, fine. So here, I need some extra time to finish it over winter break or whatever, and there's a good chance I would finish. The other side would be you've been doing a really crappy job in the course all along, and why should you have another opportunity to essentially retake the course unless you actually do retake it? I mean, they're totally different perspectives on how one's doing in a course.
Laura.
But that's exactly the point. So on the one hand, you have the people that are doing well, and those are not the ones that forget to turn in their paperwork or don't bother and get an F. So it is the ones that are kind of, you know, and sort of, yeah, don't care.
But what happens if, say, I get deployed, can't finish my course, and I'm not back within a year?
Well, I'm sure that there are exceptions for that. I mean, you know, there should be a way of putting an extension in because of special circumstances. So I think that would be the way out. But I have no patience.
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, there are.
I don't think we should coddle students if they can't be bothered.
Cecile.
I mean, I agree with most of what you said for most of the same reasons. I think that at some point we need to treat students like adults. You know, they can vote. A lot of them can drink. I think they should be able to finish an incomplete. But I also think that in giving an incomplete, we do need to communicate clearly with the students what that means and not just give them automatically because we know a student had trouble and, oh, you know, I want to be nice to that person. I think there really needs to be a conversation with that student saying, okay, here's the deal. You know, what would it take you to finish the work that you haven't completed yet and to really sort of that be a contrast? And then if there's a situation like a deployment, okay, well, then you talk about that further. But, yeah, no, I think students need to take responsibility for their grades.
Go for it, Ken.
Could I get Mike to address this? Because as of a year and a half ago, even though there was no formal exception in your deployment case, it was very commonly done in certain disciplines that you extended incompletes administratively. What's the current status of that policy?
Well, I've searched Board of Regents and I've searched Faculty Senate history, and I find nothing that tells us we have the ability to do exception to do extension.
No, I understand that.
So
what I'm asking is, what's the current policy as far as are administrative exceptions granted as they have been in the past yet or not?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
But probably under stricter circumstances, such as deployment or serious illness or something like that.
That's okay. I think so, yeah.
Okay, so the reason we brought this up as a discussion item was to get exactly this input. So really just to get a feeling here about whether or not we should think about bringing a motion forward to change it or if we were happy with what we are, how many people are happy with the current policy of if you don't complete the incomplete portion of the course that led to the incomplete paperwork, automatically go to an F after a year? How many people would like to see it go to whatever grade the student would have gotten if they had just finished the course without having completed the work? How many people think we should discuss this more? Okay, so...
excuse me, just from the telephone, can you tell me how many raised their hands for either of those? Not the general...
Not many on either case. And
okay,
and not very high, and looking kind of split. So it was one of those timid things. And I see we have Linda jumping in the back here.
Is it okay if I...
Thank you.
Go for it.
Linda Hatsmith, Director, Academic Advising Center. Mike, do you have an idea of how many incompletes are processed each semester?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. It's hundreds.
I know that if this changes, and so the grade is the same as it would have been when the student asked for the incomplete, the word will spread and you will be inundated with incomplete requests from students.
And fewer will get completed.
I don't think, honestly, you know, I'd say in the vast bulk of cases, like was said, either it's very straightforward, I'm getting an A so far and something really awful has happened, I need some extra time, and that doesn't happen very often. And the other one is where a person's been doing really crappy. They're just barely skimming by with a C. And they say, well, you know, I can probably finish this. And again, sometimes they come through and finish it, and frequently they don't. But in a case like that, invariably, the amount of work not done is such that when averaged in with the C, it's going to turn into a D minus or an F anyway. Mm-hmm. So it really, in the vast bulk of cases, it wouldn't do anybody any good to say, well, let's just go ahead and take that stuff that you didn't do and say you didn't do it and average it in and see what we get, because it's probably going to be something really awesomely low.
Yeah, Linda, I think I heard you say something that indicated we might not have been clear about what's going on here. The suggestion is that if a student completes part of the course and has a legitimate reason for not completing the rest of it and gets an incomplete, the default grade, if they don't come through with the rest of the material, the default grade is that it's a combination of what they had completed and a zero for the rest.
That's what they missed.
Exactly. All right. It's not the grade that they had when they stopped doing the work.
Agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
Yeah, I understand. I didn't make that clear on my end. But I still think students are probably going to miss or may not understand that fine point. If incompletes are truly used the way it says in the policy, for circumstances beyond the student's control, then I don't think we'll have a problem. But I think there's still an awful lot of incompletes out there that are just cases of students begging the professor to please let them have an incomplete, and so the professor gives in.
I have one more comment. This has come up largely because there was a comparison in the Faculty Alliance among the policies at UAA, UAF, and UAS. And we've been making some effort to align these sorts of policies if the faculty can all agree. And it became clear that UAF is the only one that right now the faculty say they want to have an incomplete automatically turn into an F after a year. The other two MAUs don't do this. That's what's prompted this discussion. So the question, so we can actually bring in experience from the other two if you'd like to see it. So the question to you all is, do we want to stick with this, or is there interest in discussing it?
So is the other eight MAU's policy to switch to what the grade would be, given the rest of the stuff was zero?
No, they have the perpetual I, which is a real problem if it comes back, and they want to finish the incomplete 8 years later, and the faculty member has moved on, and they don't have other notes and grades, et cetera. I think we don't want to go there. We want to have some policy with some consequence. And the question is, do we want to keep it, go to an F, or do we want to say go to whatever it would be of what they've completed plus a zero for the rest?
So ours will be different no matter what.
Right, and we have to actually petition Board of Regents to do that. Yeah. Jordan had her hand up first.
I just want to briefly say that the policy for allowing the submission of an incomplete is pretty restrictive and is certainly something that I rarely give a student. It's an extreme, unusual circumstance where I would agree to submit an incomplete grade. And still, I would say 90% of them don't complete, no matter how much I communicate with them and encourage them and hound them about it. So I think there are a lot of issues around, you know, what's fair and how even the policy for an instructor to agree to submit an incomplete for a student, maybe even that needs to be looked at as well.
Okay. We're going to start running seriously over here, and it looks like this one's bringing up a lot of discussion. Do we want to continue discussion on this one next time?
Please.
Okay. So let's go ahead and continue the discussion on this one next time. People are raising valid points. I really think this is something we need to address. So, Jane, if you could make sure it makes the next agenda, I'd really appreciate that.
Is this something that would continue electronically as well?
In terms of the discussion?
Mm-hmm.
I would think so. What do you guys think? Yeah, so we can discuss it electronically. Let's try the best way to do that, whether we want to do it through a website or if we want to do it through. We don't want to inundate everybody and have all of you delete your Faculty Senate emails.
There ought to be some mechanism, though, right?
We can work it out, and we'll let you guys know. So wait for one email from us. Don't storm us with everything else yet. So, iBlog. Okay. One last thing before break, designation of courses at Arctic in the UAF catalog. Mike, did you want to give us a quick rundown on that?
Sure. I just wanted to give department chairs a heads up that I'm going to be sending lists of courses from your courses in the catalog that we believe are Arctic-centered or Northern relevant. And the reason for this is that the University of the Arctic now has a search engine where we can upload our courses into their search engine, and students who are searching for Arctic-relevant courses can find them. The other reason is that we would like to designate those courses as Arctic relevant or Northern relevant in our catalog some way. So that's something I'd like to move forward with, just to give you a heads up. And if you have any questions.
Yeah, any questions for Mike? Any discussion of marking things as Northern focused?
So you think this is so it's going to the department chairs and they are responsible for distributing it within?
Yeah.
Because they don't necessarily know if
we
think that our courses are Northern relevant.
Sure. And what we've done is about three of us have gone through the course descriptions in the catalog, and we picked out based on the course descriptions and titles which courses we think are. But, of course, you know, I want to send that to the department chairs and say, if there's something here that should be removed, please remove it or add more courses. So it would be up to the department to designate a course as Northern relevant. And that would become if we're going to do this in the catalog, that would become part of the new course submission form as well. You'd have a box on there to mark it as Arctic relevant or Northern relevant.
So if you have a very old course description in the catalog and the course has changed enough that it would, in our view, fit this designation but hasn't been listed, we can...
And then you should be updating the course description, too.
Right, exactly. Provide a syllabus.
What a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah. Any other discussions? Any other comments, discussion on this one? Nope. Then let's take a 5-minute break. Let's come back at around 2:25, and we'll pick up with announcements.
Hey, Jane, can you hear me?
I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. I'm having problems earlier. This is Steve Brown in Palmer.
You made a comment, and it wasn't heard.
No, we were having trouble with our phones.
Oh, okay. Well, we can hear you now.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh.
But he wasn't on roll call.
James, check your roll.
Okay.
I'll cross-reference.
You know,
where is it?
Probably don't have a course like that. But, you know, things that mostly apply to our climate or what.
It should be linked out of chapter one.
Paramedic climate, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but
so you have trouble
I'm not.
In the fire science, Mike.
Right. But yeah.
Yeah. So that's trying to get right.
Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
But that's what I think.
Okay. I sent you an email asking about the dive video from the Delta Dive series of videos.
Boy, I don't remember getting that email, but I'll look at that.
It wasn't urgent. But
right. I mean, we did. I do have some
so the
photos.
This is going to be
one. Well, actually, where were you?
We're trying to locate and digitize everything that has been sponsored by the North Center, and especially the Delta Dive, because they're all analog video. They're sitting on the shelf.
Right. Yeah. We didn't. I don't think we had video. I think we had still pictures. And I'm sure I still have the the Bering Sea ones, I think we may not have kept it because they were still completely.
Okay.
You know.
Sonny said that about his stuff.
They were just like. It was like looking in a cloud. So.
Okay, but you might have Resurrection Bay still on it.
Yeah, those were nice. I hope the film is pulled up.
Actually, if they would just pull it.
So we'll scan.
We went down. In some ways, it had nothing to do with the research. It was common. Authentic chamber from the bottom, but we went down the rock walls and put.
I think I get it.
All right, let's get the show back on the road. All right, as you guys have probably noticed, the agenda was in a somewhat different order than you were used to, and part of it was that we really wanted to handle the business of the Senate before we took time in terms of guest speakers, et cetera. And we've added an announcement section, and what this really is this is for, is there something key you feel the whole Senate should know that's coming through your committee or whatever? It's separate from your normal committee reports, which are written, and as people have pointed out, we all know how to read. So, you know, this is really to highlight anything you think could be important. So, under the announcements, do we have anyone who wants to contribute something coming from their committee? Or things like the Committee on the Status of Women's Luncheon, things along those lines. Go for it, Jane.
Committee on the Status of Women sponsoring the Women's Faculty Luncheon on Tuesday, October 4th, 12:30, and right here. So please pass this on to your faculty. And the invitations have been sent out, and so people should begin to RSVP, please. Thank you.
Perry.
A unit criteria committee, I just want to remind everybody that if you have your criteria pending, the fall is the best semester to get it into us because we really only have two or three meetings in the spring semester and we tend to run out and that'll just run you over to the next summer. So if you're pending, please give us your criteria or plan to have your faculty work on it so that we can get it before the end of the fall. Because we will run out of time.
Any other announcements?
I actually have two. So these are both for GAC. And one is I just wanted to publicly thank the administration for actually reviewing the definition of international student degree completion. This is something the Faculty Senate had talked about last year. And there's a new policy that's working its way through and is currently under review at the administration. So progress. I'm really happy to see that. It makes it feel like we're actually getting stuff done here in the Faculty Senate. And then the other one is just a deadline reminder that if you have new course proposals or new majors, minors, et cetera, that paperwork, if you get it in by October 7th and it's approved, it's guaranteed to make it into the catalog for the 2012. If you make it in after, maybe it'll make it, maybe not. So if you have new courses, et cetera, that you want to make sure that they're going to make it into the 2012 catalog, get them through your unit's curriculum committee. And then on to onto either GAC for graduate courses or the curriculum committee for undergraduates.
Good advice. Any other questions? I mean, or announcements?
Yeah, Todd Radenball in Dillingham. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can now.
Okay, just a nice announcement that the Arctic AAAS meeting is in Dillingham this month. Into September 21st to 24th. So if you're interested and want to come out to Dillingham, we got a great conference going.
Great. Any other announcements? All right, hearing none, let's go ahead and go to governance reports. We have Pitts Vesey here for staff council.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. My name is Pips Vesey. I'm the project administrator for the EPSCoR project. I have just been started as president of staff council and ran on the platform solely to have our meetings end at 11 o'clock, and that was overwhelming support. So we've done a little bit of adjusting on our agenda, which I think works well. We're actually taking care of business before the break, so there's motivation to get through that before we go get tea. We are trying to get a lot more work done in committee this year rather than kind of having a long, drawn-out conversation about everything that's on people's minds during our meetings. So we're hopeful that we'll be kind of maybe a little bit more efficient and organized this year, and really looking forward to the year. Wanted to thank Kathy for attending our first meeting. We were both in contact with email and hope to have a nice line of communication open and support each other in the projects that we're doing jointly and the different agenda items that we share. Staff Alliance is represented well by UIF. The Vice President, Joella Sparks, is the President of Staff Alliance this year. So she's a veteran leader in staff council affairs. So we're really looking forward to having Joella here representing us on Staff Alliance. The things that are most pressing for staff council right now are compensation for the non-represented staff, health care issues, the tuition waiver process. We're just talking about all those things, and it's going to be a busy first semester. But we're trying to be really efficient in our groups that are talking about these things. So I'm hoping that we'll have some good outcomes. Looking forward to working with you and Kathy, and we'll try to make it here on a regular basis. If there's things that you'd like brought back to staff council, or if there's issues that you have questions about that we're dealing with, happy to be here. We'll try to keep it short and sweet and help you get out of time too.
Any questions or comments for Pip? Thank you. Our next governance report is being given by Mari Fritek, who is the president of ASUAF and, more importantly, our student regent.
All right. Hi. Thanks for inviting me again. I guess I'll kind of summarize the stuff that we did this summer in ASUAF, and then I'll talk about some of the goals that we have for the year. First thing that I like to brag about is the Outdoor Ed Center. They've built the whole structure. It's not quite open yet, but we're really excited about it because ASUAF Senate donated $50,000 out of our carry forward account. And because of that, the chancellor was able to match it with other donations. So we're really excited that's happening. It's going to be really great. It's going to turn into an ice climbing wall in the wintertime. It's going to be really cool. So also, I wanted to brag about the Sun Star because that's also an ASUAF-funded thing. They actually turned a profit for the first issue, which I guess doesn't happen very often. I think that's partially thanks to the new ad manager, Jordan Schilling. And I think they're continuing to turn a profit for every issue, which is really good because they ran out of money last year. So let's see. Some of the goals that ASUAF and I personally have for the year, we're going to focus, like the president of UA is also focusing on, we're going to focus on advising a lot this year because the Coalition of Student Leaders recognized it as one of the issues that they're going to focus on. So I'm going to try and get ASUAF into that whole thing as well. And I'm going to be having meetings with people to figure out where we have wiggle room and like where we can streamline the process and make it an actual benefit for students rather than signing papers and, you know, that kind of thing. also, I'm looking at the NANA contract with Dining Services just to see if there's any way that it, the way that NANA operates with the university can be approved upon with relation to their contract. I have a meeting with Robert Holden on Friday to figure out different things for that. Also, we said goodbye to Sabra Phillips this summer. She resigned and moved to a different department within the university. She's down in Hutch now. But we have a new office manager, and I'm really excited about her. Her name's Ann Williamson. She used to work down in facilities, so that's pretty cool. And she's very willing to learn, and she's going to be very helpful. But for as far as the Senate goes, we're going to be focusing a lot on training our senators a lot more because there's been a lack of leadership the past couple years. And so they just allocated some money to create a training video. So because we have such a high turnover, there's like new senators, half the Senate turns over at least every year. So it's difficult to keep continuity going with that. So we're going to do some training with that and just have an emphasis on veteran senators being leaders for the rest of them. So,
yeah. Any questions for Mari? Nope. Well, thank you for coming. And that brings us to our union reports, Unite Academics. Jordan?
Hi. I have a couple things. There is a new executive board that's been elected, President Abel Bujito. The org VP for the UAF campus is Dabu Misra. And I'm not on the executive board, but I will remain, at least for the time being, probably this semester, the representative of UNAC to the Senate. The this new executive board is working in incremental ways to increase communication. One of them is me sitting here hoping to hear from senators who have difficulties or problems that might be contractual ones or ones that the union might help you with. The meetings that the executive board holds are now, you will receive emails. You should have received the email in August 26th. That gave you the agenda and the minutes from the last meeting and the phone-in numbers if you want to phone in and be a part of those meetings. There's only short portions of the meetings that are closed sessions. Most of them are open to members. So those announcements will be continually sent out, so you will know when the e-board is meeting and where and so on. As you know, there's a new collective bargaining agreement that is posted on the United Academics website. And in fact, today at
4 o'clock,
thank you, in Wood Center C, E and F, there's a general membership meeting about the new CBA, focusing particularly on information about two of the articles, Article 9, which is the one on faculty evaluation, promotion, tenure, and so on, and Article 12, which focuses on personnel files. So that's today. You get an hour break after this meeting and go, you know, next door and have another one.
Other than that, a couple things. The Alaska Labor Relations Association Agency. We're still awaiting their decision on the case before them. And I am told there are still investigations about particular aspects of the dependent audit that was done in the healthcare program last year. That's still happening. And the lawsuit, the ORP Tier 1 lawsuit is, of course, still underway, and as far as I know, still scheduled for trial in January.
Thank you. Any questions for Jordan? Nope. Jane, do you want to give us an update on UAFT?
I just want to give a brief update on the Joint Healthcare Committee. We've been meeting all year, including in the summer, and it's once a month, and then there's subcommittees. The next meeting is Wednesday, the 21st, and I'll speak to the committee about this is a committee statewide, faculty and staff and administrators, but I'll speak to the committee about getting a report to all senators. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Jane? Nope. Well, that brings us to our guest speaker, Chris Racina. Come on up, Chris. We've got a spot for you.
Emergency.
Yes, it's in the packet with the agenda.
Okay, perfect. I am here as a representative of the Chancellor's Cabinet, the policy that we've been working on for some time, ever since our last ice storm caused some problems with keeping campus open or employees traveling.
Go ahead and grab a mic.
We have some people on the phone.
It makes it easier.
Oh, okay, great. So I've been charged by Cabinet to come before Staff Council and Faculty Senate to have you review the draft policy and give me feedback on your thoughts on that, workable or not workable, constraints that you see or other issues that you want Cabinet to consider as we work on the policy. And we are trying to get it in place before the next ice storm, so I think we have a little bit of time, but not much, maybe.
Not much, no.
So anyone have any comments on the draft emergency closure policy?
Yeah, Chris, I had a question. I've read through this and didn't see anything in there unfamiliar. So is this essentially codifying the informal practice, or is there something being changed here?
It's codifying largely what happened during the last ice storm and how we dealt with things. Although during the last storm, I think there were half a day of administrative leave declared, because we were caught unawares, as was most of the town, with the last ice storm. So this codifies what we did last time, which is why it's very familiar.
I think one of the concerns I had then and I have with what I read here is that in some ways the employees who earn the lease will be the most likely to have to use their leave time because they can't work from home, you know, or I can't do the things that are sort of recommended as an alternative. So they're kind of, in a sense, the ones being the most punished for bad weather. So I'm wondering if there's a way to kind of even that out a little bit. I know among staff members just listening around the seventh floor of Gruning, it was definitely a recognition that, you know, faculty has the opportunity to either move to online options for their courses or, you know, were able to work from home, but they didn't have that option. And I have to say, even as a faculty member, that did seem unfair to me. You know, so our admins in the department sat around. Nobody was there. Not like they were essential in any way, but if they wanted to go home and be safe and warm, they have to take leave time. And it just, you know, it just really didn't seem right. I think it sent probably an unintended but still strong message.
So you're saying that employees who are in the least might be the most likely not to have internet access or the tools
mm-hmm.
to work at home?
Or because of their job description, not have that opportunity, you know? But they're usually the lowest earners in our system.
We do recognize that depending on where you live, you might be able to make it to work. So we did recognize that some of the lower paid employees may live closer to the university, could still make it to work. But I will talk with Cabinet about the issues you raised. I'm not sure.
So they have to put themselves at higher risk. So, you know, so they're going to be more likely to push it because they don't want to lose that day's salary or use up one of their vacation days. And so, you know, I mean, if the weather's bad enough, it really shouldn't matter whether you go 2 blocks or 2 miles. You shouldn't be going.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an idea, if it were you in charge, where would you establish a cutoff? How would you discern that, if you could give me a little?
Well, I think if the weather's bad enough that you tell people to stay at home because, you know, it's not safe driving, then, you know, unless you're absolutely necessary to keep, you know, whatever, the heat on or whatever it is, you know, just stay home. Suck it up. So I think, in essence, the system would have earned a lot of brownie points with its employees on the long run for having to pay salary for 2 days, you know, that people maybe didn't work or worked less, but I think on the long run that would have gone a long way.
Laura?
I also wanted to make the field point here as well. Those employees that are living close to the university, that is actually a very high-priced living area, so most people in the lower price classes are living in North Polk.
Right.
And so that's one issue. And the other problem is this whole online access. And it's like, great, I can do it. I can teach from home, and nobody's there. What's the point?
Mm-hmm. Nobody's in class.
Correct. Because some of the students may not have online access because they're sitting in some cabin, snowed in.
Yeah.
You know,
I've lived in a cabin.
Like,
been snowed in.
Option for a university somewhere in the lower 48, but it doesn't acknowledge Alaska and there's very unique issues that we have.
One of the constraints that Cabinet struggled with and we also have to address is the fact that we are a residential campus, so we do have many students on campus who are still able to attend class, and that's one of the drivers to have campus open and classes in session to the extent we can.
But they shouldn't be walking halfway across campus. I mean, if the weather really is that bad, they shouldn't be going, you know? And the faculty shouldn't be driving in just to have class. I mean, it just...
The weather wasn't that bad.
Well,
I could not get out of my street.
I have classes. My students showed up. It was no big deal, really.
I just wanted to make one point that might be sort of like equitable. You raised this point about the lower paid staff maybe not being able to make it in. You know, for people who have children who are in school or daycare or something, those places are going to be closed, and you can't work from home anyway. So, you know, faculty, whoever it might be, they're not going to be making their paycheck that day either. They'd have to take a leave day.
Any other questions or comments? And I assume that if you've got some other ones that you can follow up with Chris.
Yes.
Via email, in terms of if something else comes up that you, having thought about it, you know, and listened to the discussion here, you know, rings a bell, gives you an idea, go ahead and contact Chris on this one.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That brings us to Chair Comments Committee Reports. This is something the Administrative Committee talked about. Do we really need this section of the meeting, given that people put reports in the back of the agenda? Any feeling on this? How many people think we should drop this section and just have the reports attached?
I think having reports attached is a good idea.
Actually, I'm not so sure. I was quick to raise my hand, yes, we should have reports attached, but I do think that by having at least a quick report, it provides the opportunity for asking questions and clarification. So I don't know. I think probably... I don't know if the majority of us would actually read the report and have enough information to then vote on various things, so I don't know.
Jane?
Well, oftentimes, and this meeting is a prime example, there aren't many reports attached. so you can't read them.
That's true. There haven't been any meetings.
That's true. But
Jordan?
It seems to me that there could be, as you had with the announcement, that there could be opportunities provided for some speaker of one of these reports if they felt that they wanted to point to something, but it seems to me that that's different. Most of the meetings that I attended last year, there was this long series of announcement of the committee, no comment, no comment, no comment.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't want to say that there shouldn't be a space for those committees that do have an item that they want to draw people's attention to. That opportunity ought to be given.
Okay, so how about this? You do your committee reports, you attach them for the agenda, and then we now use this as an opportunity to say, if there is anything you would like to highlight, put your hand up, say who you are, what committee you're with, and what your highlight is.
That's a good idea.
People like that format?
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with that format. So, all right, having said that, who's in the committee? What would you like to highlight?
Could we also extend that and have a follow-up session right after that where people could ask questions of the committee chairs based on the reports that are on there? So basically twofold. Committee chairs first present, and then the second, open questions about any of the reports.
Good idea. People like that idea?
Yes.
All right. So let's go ahead and start with the first part, which is any committee chairs want to report anything cool? Or not cool, but important. Resounding silence. All right, are there any questions for the one committee that did attach their report? Resounding silence. All right, that brings us to members' comments and concerns and questions. Any comments, concerns, questions? Hearing none, do I have a motion to adjourn? Do I have a second? All right, we're out of here. Thank you guys for ending the first meeting of the year under time.
Hey, Jane, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Oh, it's just for you. Maybe I should just call you.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they want to talk about everything?
Well, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Let's see.
put in apple trees, and people don't know that
it's not cost effective in a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was, initially,
I remember it being, so I think you're... Well, we've got a fence. We bought the lot next door. We got roads on it. It's only 6 feet, so I need to top it up another 2 feet.
I wasn't sure because I didn't know
that. You got the core of the community.
Jane might know the ins and outs.
Yeah, but I think I was allowed to ask.
I mean, Roy probably would have really worked on it. I would have been there. He would have
been there. But did you have that on like a solar thing? Actually, the first one are only up 4 trees, so I'm just going to wrap them in one box. But after this, probably next year, I'll try and put it up to 8 feet or something.
But the shift has happened in terms of the number.
I have a couple
questions.
That's right.
So we have more
concerns.
Yeah.
I talked to the
committee members who can't be
I tell you that
by
one that has had a couple of his courses that can be moved down.
They know more than
some how things are going. Yeah, he has a, don't have many people.
I'm very hopeful that this configuration will be able to.
That's not that really good.
I don't think
it's
happened to
things
get a roll. It's actually, well, it's not like a great